Good afternoon.
This is an intimate enough space where you can respond. It's okay. Feel free to respond. So my name is Noel Snyder. I am a program manager here at the Calvin Institute of Christian Worship, and I'm so pleased that all of you have, even in that after lunch lull, have decided to come in here and keep engaging on this topic. I imagine it's a very live topic, a perennially important topic for many who are in ministry, who work with worship teams, and so I really look forward to our time that we have coming up here together. Before we do anything else, and as we're all finding our way to our seats, I'd like to open us with prayer. Gracious God, thank you that you have created us as your people, called us to yourself, and given us all the gifts that we are able to now use as members of your body for your glory. And I thank you for the chance that so many of us have to be a part of a team. To not just be on our own, but to be placed with others for our encouragement and for the betterment of your body. We also acknowledge that this may be difficult for precisely the reasons that it's difficult for us to live in any relationship and to even sometimes live with ourselves. And we rely on your grace as we enter this topic, and we rely on your Spirit to lead us and to give us insight and wisdom. And I thank you for all of the insight, wisdom, and experience that you have given to those who are bringing in into this room today. So we pray for these next couple hours that we would have a rich time of learning together in your Spirit.
Yes, Lord.
In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
So I'll... I'm trying to navigate. The sight lines are going to be a little bit weird, so I'm going to try to sit down here, and we're gonna sit at the table. So hopefully you can be able to lean this way and that and catch a glimpse. Everybody can probably hear decently well, hopefully.
All right. As long as you project,
you have to project.
All right. So we will do our best to project the
big voices.
Exactly.
So worship voices.
So I'll begin by just doing quick introductions of those who are at the table with me. And I'll start with Nikki here, who's closest.
Hi.
So,
Hi.
Nikki is an artist, teacher, author, and culture coach, helping others to engage relationally and across culture lines. Do you want to say anything more, Nikki?
Yeah, we're worship people.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so most of my local church ministry has been in worship ministry. Worship pastor at my church for over 20 years. It gives you some context. Yeah. So I get you.
Are you still based in D.C. area?
Oh, yeah, sorry. We're in Columbia, Maryland, which is kind of between Baltimore and D.C., but a little bit closer to Baltimore. Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Next, we have Maria Monteiro. Maria is an associate professor and the chair of music department at Baptist University of the Americas, San Antonio, Texas. And she also serves as the music director at Primera Iglesia Bautista Mexicana, which is First Mexican Baptist Church in San Antonio, and she's a doctoral student at Baylor University in Waco, Texas. Do you want to say anything more?
Yes, I think, I hope when I'm speaking, I'll keep clear this universe that I inhabit as a professor at BUA for short, which is a very small but very multicultural international school, and also being the music director of this bilingual congregation in San Antonio that's mostly Spanish-speaking, but we do have a small English mission. So I will kind of refer to my experience in both places, and I will try to clarify, because these are very different places. I'm originally from Brazil, so that also adds... I work usually in Spanish and English, but So I have an accent, whatever I am, because people don't speak Portuguese, and usually when they do, it's from the south and I'm from the northeast, so I still sound different. So I'm used to being different.
Excellent. Well, thank you. And next is Ruth Ann Scheringa. And Ruth Ann is the worship director at Emmanuel Christian Reformed Church in Brampton, Ontario. And from 2015 to 2019, she also served as a worship ministry team leader at Crosspoint Christian Reformed Church, also in Brampton. And recently, Ruth Ann has been endorsed as a worship coach for the worship ministries of the Christian Reformed Church. Would you like to say anything more?
Yeah, beyond being a worship director, I'm also a wife and a mom. And that may seem silly to say at a worship conference, but it's part of who I am, and it really shapes who I am in the context. Mm-hmm. And not only have I been married for a long time, 30 years, but the guy that I'm married to is a pastor, so I know lots about collaboration. Mm-hmm. Lots. Yes, and our children are 27, 25, and 23, and doing all those things that those kids do at that age. So that's part of my life. And you said I was from Canada, right?
I did.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Well, I said Ontario. I was hoping that people would feel in the place.
Ontario, Texas.
Yeah, right.
Perfect. Could be.
So.
That's right.
And finally on the end here is Kevin Adams, who is the senior pastor at Granite Springs Church, Rockland, California, and also serves as a program affiliate with us, the Calvin Institute of Christian Worship. He is also the author of this wonderful new book that I hope some of you have gotten. Anybody have a copy you can hold up? It's called The Gospel in a Handshake, Framing Worship for Mission. It is yours at no cost as an attendee of this conference. You can go up to the second floor after you get out of here and go up and pick up your copy. You won't regret it. It's a wonderful book. Do you want to say anything more?
Well, if you're a worship leader, which I assume many of you are, and you need worship frames for this coming weekend, in the back of the book there's an index that has by category, by confession of sin, by assurance of pardon, by introducing the offering. So if you're looking for something for this week, which you might be right there right now, it's in the back. And the only other thing I'd say is I get to hang out with Nikki at her multicultural, I can say this right, multicultural leadership.
Multicultural Worship Leaders Network.
That
one.
And Baltimore, yep. D.C. area. Mm-hmm. And that was really a beautiful experience. So if you get a chance to go to Baltimore/D.C. in October.
Area, Berea.
Yeah, that's really great.
Yeah, you can talk to me afterwards if you're interested.
Yeah.
Thanks for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'd like to spend a moment here at the beginning of this discussion just by sort of almost defining the topic. We've had a bit of a chance to hear about the contexts from which our panelists are coming. But I also want to I wonder if you could all reflect a little bit on just this idea of the worship team or what collaborative worship planning is. Means, because for different people in different settings, it might mean different things. And so I'm wondering, what have you seen? What have you experienced? What have you heard of? What kind of ideas and settings do you have in mind when you think about collaborative worship planning and the worship team? And any of you may jump in.
I'll start. I'm going to stand up. Is that all right?
Sure.
I just look at weird after a while, but I gotta look at you. Mm-hmm. So from my context, our church our worship was centered around teams of people singing together, and a choir of people singing together, and bands on rotation. So that's what I'm mostly used to, is that sort, but like you guys, you flow in any context you find yourself in. But that was our context in the local church. I love a worship team. I just love team in general, mostly because even as leaders, it's so awesome to just know that you're not by yourself. Mm-hmm. And anytime we're on a team, I think we are a model and a reflection of the community that God has asked us to be anyway. We're able to model different, this is a terrible word, but it's what's here. Versions of people that are in our church community. We get to model different ways of what worship looks like. And, can you imagine if you, the leader, it was all dependent on you to be the model for worship and, you know, expression or confession or what, like it was all on you. I love the fact that a team comes together, adds the best of who they are, and starts to share the burden, the load, and the beauty of ministry all together. So that's kind of my context.
Okay, I'll go. I'm not going to stand up. I hope you can hear me. I think now that what you're talking about with worship teams is this kind of the instrumental, the band, the group of people that leads on a Sunday morning. But I was also thinking of it a little bit more broad than that, if that's okay.
Sure.
Thinking about worship planning teams that are seasonal, the people that you kind of pull together to plan Advent and Christmas, those kind of teams as well. Maybe even one-offs where you're collaborating with the GEMS for a thing or a specific service, or collaborating with the youth for a specific service. I'm collaborating with pastors all the time on their sermon planning and thinking back and forth of how we're going to shape a service. And then as well as the weekly musician group that we have. So that's my context. We all practice together on a weeknight. The musicians do in preparation for Sunday. So that's my context.
Mm-hmm. So I've been in the same church 29 years. It's a church my wife and I began way back when. So the worship planning has taken a lot of different forms, as you might imagine. In the early days, it was she and I having a conversation. She's a gifted worship leader and musician, so it was she and I having a conversation about what it would be like this week. And then that evolved. In the early days, we were influenced strongly by Willow Creek Community Church. Some of you have heard of that little tiny church in Chicago. So in the early days, first 10 or 12 years, we were influenced by them significantly, and we ran, if you can forgive the sports analogy, the West Coast Reformed Offense of the Willow Creek Association sort of vibe. So we always had this covenantal theology that was going on, and we always had this sort of West Coast, a little bit looser vibe than Chicago in that suburban context had. And so in that kind of generation, we had a volunteer drama leader, a volunteer musician, and my wife is a volunteer worship leader, and myself, we would meet over lunch every single week and plan out and go through the service, because that's when folks were available. They could drive into the church where we were meeting for lunch. That was sort of in the middle of our church life. And now we have a part-time paid music leader, a part-time paid worship leader, myself, and some interns. And we do the planning ourselves. There's some convenience when you pay people to show up. That's kind of handy. So it's kind of been that whole kind of journey. Yeah.
Well, the church I'm in now, it's a very old congregation. It's actually the second oldest Mexican church in the country. It was founded in 1888 in San Antonio. And until the year 2000, no English really was spoken in the church. If you have not been to San Antonio, as some people have told me, I had no idea how people can live here, be an American citizen, and not need English. San Antonio show you how that's possible. So it's a church that's old and it's very stable. We have had the same pastor for 30 years, which is very rare, especially in our context in Hispanic churches. We have members who come from Mexico, and these tend sometimes to come and go. Families that come in for a while and then they go back. Families that came, I don't know, decades ago, but they bring Mexico with them. So Sunday morning, my church is like we're going to Monterrey. We eat tacos before the service. But with all these people and all the work that has been done, one thing that we do not have is money. So there is no budget. So we have this sense that if we want something to happen, we have to just make it happen. And so we're very open to anybody who wants to help us. I am usually... For the longest time, I was really one of two people that could actually read music in the church. So they sing very well, and they have great memory. So they can learn things like that. But it's a different way of doing things. So because of that, I prize flexibility, and I tend to be very open. So I know we cannot have a lot of people to lean on and plan ahead. My pastor will never really tell me much about I'm Baptist, right? I'm Baptist. Did I say that? So that means you can pretty much go in any direction at any time, right? Other than Christmas and Easter, right? So I've been there now 11 years. So I know kind of how that can go. But we have a great relationship and great respect, even though we kind of go, you know. And sometimes it's amazing how everything comes together. But I think for the church, they're not going to be paying attention to, okay, this song really didn't go with them. But I take that as, you know, we can learn from all these elements that are incorporated there. So in my case, I tend to be alone a lot of times. Alone in the sense that I have ideas in my mind, and then I will find people that, you know, can talk about that, and they will come and join me and do amazing things. But it's all a very kind of unpredictable way. So even though the congregation is very stable and have been there a long time, but that's how we work, at least in the music area. At the school, it's also temporary because, you know, students come in every year, right? And then they leave. Mm-hmm. So I don't ever feel that this is really my church. Now, the good side of that, I can experiment a lot with that group. Mm-hmm. And they go with, they come from everywhere. They don't know, is that how we do it? Yeah, we're going to try that. I never heard that done. Let's do that. So, but once I do, that's my lab, right? So I try things in that context, and they'll go for it. Singing in many languages, Spanish and English are pretty much the default languages. Outside of the classroom, everybody's, I would say, 80% Spanish is spoken. But then I can try things there and say, well, this is something I want to build on. So from there, I can get ideas and then float those ideas with my congregation and see who can kind of make that happen. And some things I know, this is never going to work in my church, but it was a good thing that happened here. So.
Thank you. I love just hearing all four of those responses because I'm hearing like so many different things which really affect the idea of collaborative planning, the idea of what worship team means. It's the history of the congregation. It's the local contextual relational dynamics. It's the denomination that you come from. And it's even sometimes it sounds like what who or what you aspire to be, who are your models that you're aspiring towards. I want to shift just a moment and say, for me personally, I don't know what it is in my personality or my makeup that I sometimes tend to approach things looking at the problem first. So when we think about teams, like, sometimes just saying the word team, and I just instantly think of, oh, it's so messy. Oh, the conflict and this kind of stuff. Instead of doing that, which is normally what I would do, I want to start with just a celebration, not an idealization, but a celebration. Or what are some of the joys of being a part of a well-functioning team? When collaborative worship planning happens well, what are some of the joys of that experience?
So many. Gosh. I'll share. So one of the things I love about being a leader of a team is, I mean, it's a blessing and a curse, but for me, you know, most of our people are volunteer. And I don't know if that's probably, how many of you are running volunteer teams? Mostly. Good. That's awesome. That's so awesome. Because, you know, as leaders, it's really our charge and it's on us to build something beautiful for our teams, particularly if they're volunteers, right? And sometimes we can lose that in the team mentality, right? But to say, you know, your people have been, you know, they got a job. And then they make a choice to come to you as a leader or to come to your team, like they do it because they want to. If they volunteer, they do it because they want to. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's cool. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, you all probably have some people that feel like they have to, but nobody has to do anything, right? Most of us, I think our people, we have volunteers, they want to. So the idea of having a team in a church, a ministry organization where you know that, you know, Susan worked her 9-to-5 job and drove an hour to get to rehearsal at 6 p.m. or 7 p.m. or whatever at night, and then walked into the door and just said, oh, I just couldn't wait to get here. Is Susan saying that in your ministry? Maybe you don't have a Susan, but, you know, Keisha, Malif, whoever, right? If those people, like, hopefully they're saying, I can't wait to get to rehearsal. Because when I get there, I know that people are, I get to fall into the arms of people who love me and smile and all of that. I love that there's no other space on a team. Most people don't get that at work. Probably not going to get a hug at work or somebody listen to them at work. And I hope that you're providing that on your teams, not just doing music. Because ain't nobody got time for just music. Not in church. Let the music go. Like, be with each other. Right? But I love that about a team, that somebody gets to come and experience something that they may not get if they work at McDonald's all day, or they work at Verizon all day, or in my case, for the government all day. Sweet Lord! Ooh, it's stressful out there, you know? But they get to come and just be a part of things. I love that. I think that's a great joy as a team in the church.
I will echo that the team building and relationships that come around making music together. I've been with the same general core group of musicians, though vocalists and guitarists have moved in and out, for 15, 16 years. And we want to be there and be together. And we've become, although we're too large to be called a small group, we are a small group. We are committed to each other and to praying and reading the Bible together and supporting each other in whatever life we may have, besides being a musician in this team. And that's a really, really rich experience. And then on the plus side is that you feel like worship is not just coming from me, it's actually coming from the congregation, because these people are from the congregation. Mm-hmm. And I love that part of it as well, that teamwork that we do.
I think of three things come to mind. One is just the joy of doing something well together. Because, as you know, as worship leaders, a lot of times it doesn't go all that well. And the Holy Spirit has a way of even making that turn out quite well sometimes. And sometimes it just leaves you with a puzzle. But when it goes well, we've had people like come to our church for the very first time, and we do kind of work hard at the theme. We work with the lectionary. We do what I call fly in formation with the lectionary. We're not slaves to it, but we are connected to it most of the church year. And so when there's a theme, like right now it's Epiphany, and we're going through Isaiah and the passages of light, the darkness, in the people walking in darkness have seen a great light, was last week's text. And we'll have someone come and say, that all like fit together, and be amazed. You know, that all fit, and it was like you guys had talked to each other that week, and you knew what each other was doing, and it was amazing, and we kind of take it for granted, but they thought, that was just so thoughtful, we've never heard anything like that. So that's just the joy of having that happen is one joy. A second joy, one of the people in our church, he's been an intern with us, and now he's an associate pastor with us, his name is Q Han. And Q started as an intern right out of college, then was an intern during seminary, and now is an associate pastor and our youth leader. He was ordained back in October, and so we scripted the words based on liturgy and forms from hundreds of years ago, with some life in there and some vitality in there. But when we got to ordaining Q and we asked him the questions of ordination and asked the congregation the questions of ordination, Q is this super extra enthusiastic person. We said, Q, are you ready to have this conversation? I am ready! He said, I am psyched for this! And the way he then was, when we laid hands on him, was in tears. The congregation was in tears. So it's one of those, when you plan worship, sometimes kind of those moments happen that you invest in, but you think, oh, Lord, that was the fruit of 6 years of investment. It's such a beautiful thing. That's number two. And number three, I remember a few months ago, and this happens not as often as we like, but it happens somewhat regularly. Someone said to me, help me understand about communion, because communion in our service comes every week at the end of the service, sort of a liturgical altar call. Come to Jesus now. Come to Jesus. And one person who's new to our church had not gone to our church. He's in his 50s, not gone to any church since he was a child. Said, now, I'm not sure if I'm supposed to participate or not. No, we make it very clear. Jesus has done everything that needs to be done for you to participate. So we invite you forward if you're ready to say, Jesus, what you did. You know, so we try to make that clear. We have it in print so people are guided. But it wasn't clear to him. So he said, should I participate or not? I'm not sure I'm good enough to do this. And we gave the classic answer, well, you're not. But neither are the rest of us. So this is Jesus is good enough. Oh, good, he said. So next week, there he is in the line taking communion, coming forward, because in our church you come forward for Eucharist. And seeing it, he's got this big kind of goofy smile on his face like he just swallowed a canary or something like that. And he just showed up next to me, in front of me, and said, I'm here. I'm here. I'm doing this. Well, which is not what we ask people to say, you know, that God. thanks be to God or something like that. But it didn't. So those moments where there's marked changes in faith, where sometimes you don't see it for months and years, and other times it's right in front of you. So just such a beautiful thing. We could celebrate that as a team along with the whole church.
And I think the idea of doing something well and feeling, you know, reward for the hard work. I have the same experience. We have, in my church, we have two choirs, one that sings in the Spanish service and one in the English service. And usually they sing different things because some things don't work. There's a different setup of people. But little by little, we are doing greater things. And once we work very hard, in the very beginning, they doubt, can we really go on and get this done? And then we keep working. And then when it's done, and we have learned together so much, and then this now, what's going to be the next challenge? So I think to have this idea, that this anticipation, that we are doing something together, and we can do it, and we want to keep doing it. I think also the one thing that I like in the church is because we are small, we welcome everybody who wants to participate. And that, so in my choir, we have a student who is just turned 18, and then we have somebody who is in their early 80s. So this interaction that happens in the choir, and then because we're small, we know each other. So we pray for exams, and then in school, when exams, when you go to the doctor, right? Because somebody that has a problem with the knee and the one that has a problem with algebra. But we learn from each other's lives, and then we share that. And all of this comes in the rehearsal, like you were saying. We are friends, we are brothers and sisters, and then we're working together and you get something done. So I think it's and the congregation is also proud because they say, wow, look at our choir. Now we're doing this now together. And I think this generates a very positive energy for the congregation and for us. So.
Thank you. So, of course, along with the joys and the celebrations, I think it's good and it's appropriate safe space to just be real for a minute and to say that teams can be very difficult sometimes. And whether that's relational dynamics, power dynamics within the church, even just systems working or not working as far as systems of planning and collaboration and input and you know, what's the word? Pulling it off, actually doing it and not just talking about it. So what are some of the team dynamic and collaborative challenges that you've experienced along the way? You don't always have to go first, Nikki.
Thanks.
So. I'll go first. But you can.
I think when you're working in ministry, you're working with people. And yes. Darn those people. If you could just use your own ideas and not have all those other messy people in the way, it would be easier. But we work with people, and that's what makes it challenging. When I'm in collaborative situations, and musicians are probably classically known for this, they want to do things the way they want to do things. So those kind of balances as you're listening for people's musical opinions and collaborating. So that happens a lot on Tuesday nights for in my context. Luckily, I'm paid the big bucks to make the final cut and the final decision, but those can be a little bit stressful times sometimes unless you negotiate it well, let people know ahead of time what's expected of them. When you're giving an input or I'm asking you for some input, it does not necessarily mean we're going to use that specific idea. So having an open concept of what collaboration means, I invite and welcome input, But then we're going to bring all of these together, and then I'm going to talk about, well, why we would do it that particular way this particular Sunday. Mm. So, but the challenge is the people, of course. Yes.
I've thought two things came to mind. One is, so our church has a choir, because choirs are still cool. And at one point, it was about between like 90 and 100 people, the choir. And it's cool. wasn't always like that. Okay. Let me be clear. It started with 15 people.
Okay.
All right. So it grew over the years. But the challenge with a choir in particular, particularly when it's large, is people start to have like mob mentality. Or they don't see themselves as connected to the greater whole. Mm-hmm. So like if this was our choir, right, in this room, and what's your name?
Becky.
And so Becky decides right before we start that I just don't feel like singing. Right? And so Becky decides she just doesn't want to come. Well, you know, because Becky is in a room of a couple hundred people, or I'm terrible at that, maybe it's only 70 people in here. I don't know. Anyway, because Becky's in this room of a lot of people, she can lose perspective on her role and the importance of what she brings because there's lots of people. But if you've got 15 Beckys, 25 Beckys, that all think, oh, I'll just sit out this week. Now you got a problem. Now you lose your whole bass section, right? Now you got like altos, there's the three altos, and they're the ones that shouldn't be near the microphone. You know what I'm saying? You know, like, so, I'm just keeping it real. So, thank God for choirs. So, that is challenging. The constant reminder for people that they matter, and it matters that you're here, and it matters that you're on time, and it matters that you know your music, and it matters. It feels like sometimes, no matter how often you say it, it just falls through the cracks, and then you have to keep reminding. Anybody else feel like that sometimes? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's a challenge, team. The other thing is, when your team members aren't connected to your vision as the leader or the vision of the house, that's tricky. Our vision of the house at Bridgeway, it all centers around the multicultural church. There's 52 different nations represented in our church. And so, you know, how I choose music, what people sing is, you know, based on the vision of the house, right? So if somebody rolls up to you and says, well, when are we going to sing fill in the blank?
Yeah.
Right? How come we can't sing more of fill in the blank, right? Whatever it is on any day. And when you have that push sometimes, or if people say, well, you're not listening to this, or, you know, whatever, right? It's just that incongruency. I heard that word today, which I love. That incongruency of vision, mission, and what you're trying to actually produce when you all come together to meet the goal as a team. Those things are tricky.
I find it interesting that sometimes in my mind, what I'm saying is so clear. And the plan...
The plan
has been shared many times, has been written down, and we have... And then we hear somebody say something, and then we realize who else has not understood. Oh, what did I say that can possibly be interpreted as this? Because that's not what I said. Like, in Portuguese we have this expression that is like somebody made you take a freezing shower. You know, you are fine, and then it's like, so this is and it saddens me sometimes, because I feel almost, how can you think that I would have said that? Why I was going to, that's not what I said. So this potential for miscommunication and misinterpretation, I think, makes it difficult. And I don't work with many people in terms of leadership, So this is minimized, but whenever you have, you know, three or four people that are maybe making decisions together, I think this idea of being clear and being misunderstood, it's very, very painful, I think. Mm-hmm.
I was going to say something very similar. I was just going to say staying on the same page.
Yeah.
And that's really what everybody has just said. Staying on the same page is hard work. It's hard work for a married couple. It's hard work for parents and children. It's hard work for people who work together. It's hard work for people on the worship team. So I think all the ins and outs, the love, the shepherding, the caring, the correction, the challenge, the no, we're not doing that, all that staying on the same page. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. So in just a minute, we're going to have a time for you to turn and have a little bit of discussion with the folks around you about these questions and issues. But before we do that, I just want to ask one more question to our panelists. So when some of those difficulties arise, I'm just wondering what ideas, what resources, what strategies have you tried, employed, maybe failed at, maybe succeeded at, when you're trying to shape a healthy team? What are some of the principles or ideas or practices that you've found the most helpful in shaping a good collaborative environment?
I'll go first this time.
Yeah, go for it.
I think it requires a lot of wisdom and discernment to know how to approach the group or the choir, let's say, about something that I see it's not going well. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I like to have, so my husband is also a pastor, so I
lucky
have
you.
This, yeah, I know.
So
whenever you plan things together, it's amazing. Because I love to be able to actually, commission sermons. It works very well. That's a very good thing. But so sometimes I pray for wisdom, and then having people that I know understand me and can hear me, and sometimes correct me because maybe I'm being a little too sensitive, and that was not how it was maybe understood by everybody else. So to have somebody that I can talk to, that I trust, that we can digest those feelings and those ideas. And then sometimes, just going through this process, I feel like, okay, let's just move on and ignore. And if it's not something that I see as a habit. And sometimes I'll just have to speak with the whole group and bring it up, try not to put anybody specifically on the spot, but in just general lines, kind of reminding everybody. I think we spend a lot of time in choir practice or in music practice talking about how we're going to do it and what we're going to do it. I think I like to bring it back to the why. Why are we doing it? So I think when we are in trouble, going back to the why, first of all, we're doing this and why are we here? It's kind of recentering maybe the focus of everyone, including my own, because I maybe, you know, also have my own thoughts and maybe that's not the best thing that could be happening now. So I think discernment, somebody that you can trust, and then deciding when to do it, but always in a loving way. I've been in groups where the director will say something like, oh, I don't even want, it's not about me, but I didn't even want to ever hear some confrontation like that. I think this is horrible. Right? Again, they are volunteers, and we are, you know, different ages and different experience. But I think that's something, prayer, a trustworthy friend, somebody who understands, you know, you and what you're doing, and then deciding, let's either move on, or and then watch out for not creating circumstances where this may happen again. Mm-hmm. Watch out, kind of, keep.
I have a thought. I was writing all things. So a couple of things come to mind. First is to always explain why you're doing something. Because I think sometimes we can make a huge assumption that people always know why we're doing something. Or just because we all love God, we're like, oh, great, I trust you. Like, no, don't assume that. And work for somebody's trust as a leader. Like, work for, don't assume that they just trust you. Like, you gotta earn it. Like, work for it. And then prove it to them that you're trustworthy, because you can do that, right? So the idea of explaining, you know, why are we changing a song? Why does Brad not get his guitar solo now? You know, why are we cutting that song? Why do we choose this song? You know, that kind of stuff. Because the next thing you know, Brad's like, you know, why does Noel hate me? He's always cutting my guitar solos. You know, that kind of stuff that happens. You know, is that just me? On worship teams, you know. Next thing you know, somebody's leaving the church because Brad didn't get his solo. I don't know who Brad is, by the way. I'm sorry if your name's Brad. but just explain the why on every change you make, everything you keep doing, keep explaining why. Because hopefully it's always connected to the vision of the house, right? Again, make sure, and then that cements that. So that's the first thing. Second thing is, this is huge, address and or redirect behavior you don't want. Every time I teach a worship seminar, somebody's like, what do I do about my late percussion player or my diva singer? Or the reality is, if you're the leader, they're there, it's your fault because you won't address it. Any behavior that's happening that you don't like, if you're the leader, it's your responsibility to address it and redirect it. And I bring this up because this is actually a strategy for a healthy team. Because sometimes when there's somebody whose behavior is so in our face, it draws all our attention. And then all of the people that show up and do exactly what they're supposed to do and are committed, like, we completely forget about them. And those are the people that we actually need to stay because they're committed. And it's if we don't address that stuff and or redirect it, right, then the people that are committed and are your core team, they're going to leave because good people will not tolerate that. They'll get really exhausted. You know, your best drummer, your best singer, they're going to leave the team and go serve at the front desk somewhere. So you have to wave at Becky from the front desk because she was your best singer and right instead of on your team. So keep that in mind. And then a third thing is, particularly as music people, worship people, be word focused and not just work focused. Particularly rehearsals and that kind of thing. I go work with teams sometimes. I'm actually kind of amazed at, like, there's no scripture. No scripture, no prayer. And I'm not talking to the program. I'm talking about, like, when we're not performing. Right? We're not in front of people. But if you can help keep your team word-focused, even if it's something small. You know, like, I love John 6:29, where Jesus says, here's the only work I want you to do. Believe in the one that he has said. Great. Let's focus on that for the next 4 weeks as a team. 4 weeks. Don't read through the Bible in a year. 4 weeks, right? 4 weeks on John 6:29. And then talk about it and have that really start to manifest itself in your team. So keep them word focused, not work focused. If you don't get through a song during a rehearsal, like, cut it. If it meant that you spent more time in the word together, and that it got to show itself somehow. So those are a couple things.
Yes to all of that. And I will just add one thing that has helped us as a team to stay focused has been to start every season with a covenant or a contract that I pass out to them. It sounds really official. It's just my way to write out to them, and so that we can talk about, what do we do as a worship team? What is our goal here every time when we rehearse and when we lead on Sundays? What are our goals? What are my expectations of them? What times do we always meet? You will need to take turns doing devotions, just things like that. Because telling them why and communicating over and over again really helps. And then at the bottom is one of those things. Being part of a musical group means that sometimes you don't get to play, and we will not take that personally. And I just write that in there, and every year I read it. And then next year we'll go over it again. And then sometimes when issues come up, we can maybe come back to that. Yes. Hey, remember we talked about this. It's not about us. Here's the goal of why we're doing this. Why we're making music is for the congregation to be able to meet God. So laying that out fairly clearly.
I was going to say exactly what Ruth Ann just said, in the sense of if you can put it in print, if you can put it where it's clear and then keep it in front of folks, and Nikki was saying, and Maria, the same thing, if you can keep it in front of folks and it be redundant so people know what the expectations are, And then Ruth Ann didn't say this, but you heard it. There's clear lines of kind of how the team works and who's the captain of the team, not as a power move,
right,
but as someone's responsibility to say, there's an old factory worker who came to our church for a long time. He said, Kevin, leadership is nothing more than saying, yep, that's how we do it, and nope, that's not how we do it. It's a little simple, but because it's a little thornier
that's
than that.
Great.
There's a little wisdom in there. But it's not, it's like your diva. It's like, nope, that's not the way we do that.
Nope.
And you saying, basically, here are my expectations, and we're going to be talking about this. And not as a power move, but as a gift, a shepherding gift to the church to say, we really care about this and really care about you enough to have earnest and honest conversations. And then it's nice if the house has your back.
Yes.
Because otherwise you're a
goodness.
Teacher who has no principal support, and that's a short life.
Yes.
Vocationally.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, I am confident that there's so much wisdom, experience, I'm sure a lot of questions in this room. And so I want to just have you take a minute to turn to the folks around you, groups of 3, 4, 5, share a little bit about some of the joys and some of the challenges that you're bringing into this conversation, and maybe even a few of the strategies or ideas that you've found helpful or have at least tried in your context. And then after we talk like that for about 15 minutes, we'll come back together and we'll have an opportunity to hear a little bit more from our panelists and also to share some questions and discussion items that came out of those discussions. So, yes?
Just wondering, are you encouraging us to break from our own teams in this exercise?
Sure. I didn't necessarily have that rule in mind, but that sounds like a great idea. So I would encourage you to do that. But if you feel like actually it would be more productive to talk within your team, you can do that too. So
up to you.
That's no answer. Yes.
That's freedom.
Do what you want for the next 15 minutes.
Yes, both of those are how we do it here.
Basically, go get a Coke and come back. Whoa. Right.
I'm not a kindergarten teacher, but I have observed that. I love the energy in this room. I'm so glad that it seems like we're bringing a high-level engagement to this idea and this question. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if we actually have an opportunity now to hear a little bit about some of the things that were discussed. What are some of the things that are resonating for you? Maybe even especially some of the other things that you've heard other people say in your group. What are some of the ideas, questions that are being kicked around out there? So I'll open it to discussion right now.
One thing that caught me from our group was, you're not a volunteer, you're a servant. And they call it that instead of a volunteer. Because a volunteer can, I'm just a volunteer, you know, but if you're a servant of the Lord.
Thank you.
Thank
yeah.
you for
Thank you.
What's the difference between a paid volunteer or a paid servant or a non-paid volunteer?
Ooh, that's a deep question.
That's a serious question.
Yeah, so what was your name?
Sky.
So he had actually asked that to us before, and he was just I'm wondering if we could put that up to the panelists too, just for a brief discussion. What are some of the values of having a big paid staff, as it were? What are some of the values of actually relying on a whole group of highly dedicated servant volunteers?
I think it depends on what you value as a church. Sometimes we have these conversations like one is better than the other or more spiritual than the other, and I don't think that's relevant in the conversation. Because you can pay somebody to be an awesome musician, and they're committed, and they're right there with all your volunteers, right? So just something to keep in mind. But I think it depends on what your church values. So if your church values a high level of musicianship, to administer worship and to do that, then your church might decide to start paying people. And there's nothing wrong with that. If your church says, no, we really want our people to come out of the community, I won't even say it that way. We value people to just have an opportunity to serve, or we can't afford to pay people. I mean, I'm just keeping it real, right? Like, some of you just can't afford to pay people, and that's okay. You have to work with what you have in the season that you have it. So then you say, I was talking to this group from Columbus, Ohio, because we were talking about this, and said, if you're using volunteers, make sure that your expectation of what you're asking them to do is appropriate for what you have. Because sometimes, I was joking with them, I said, you know, sometimes if it's like, well, our church wants, you know, our pastor wants us to do all, you know, I'm just picking people, Hillsong Worship. Well, if Hillsong Worship has 6 electric guitars, 4 drummers, you know, 8 professional singers, and you got an organist who's 85 and a didgeridoo player, yeah, I was like, you know, because you're going to look at the volunteers and say, why can't y'all do this? Right? When the reality is we need to do songs that can include an organ and a didgeridoo, right? So I say all that, Sky, to say the, you know, it really depends on what is the value of your church. How much do you, I'll say it this way, but hopefully you know what I mean. How much does your church value music and the expectation of it? Well, for my church, yeah.
That's the challenge, isn't
it? It is. It's
because
really subjective.
To me is a piece of crap to somebody
right,
else.
Right.
So music, to yeah. me, is important because I grew up with it, blah, 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 and I have
yeah.
history. But there are tone-deaf individuals that a joyful noise is 2 tin cans being banged together.
Oh, I know, yeah. We and those of you...
You've got a value and a history experience. So, do we
yeah.
do a survey? Do we ask
no.
them to weigh in?
No. No, really. I think it's surveys are the worst. I think it's just coming to a decision on the lead team to say, you know, what is it we value and then how do we get there? Again, if it's, and also I think pastoral leadership also needs to trust their music people that they know what sounds good and what doesn't. So, yeah, like, if you're in a space where you're like, look, it's not cool that my bass player doesn't know how to tune his guitar. Like, that's not cool. And your pastor's like, no, it's fine. He's serving the Lord. You know, trust the music people that they know what good is. Because you're absolutely right. It's totally subjective.
Well, and your media person to do the media thing.
Yeah.
And the custodian to do the custodian thing. So you're
absolutely.
Saying that believe in the people that you've hired to do
yes.
the job.
Oh, thank you. Yes. Yes. Trust your experts. You know, if you hired a tech person.
And then when you have to fire them because you don't have a budget or they're not doing a job.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, hey, this is, I'm just trying to keep it real, y'all. I mean, this is the world we live in. I mean, if you're going to hire, just know, if you're going to hire somebody to work on your ministry teams, just know that that's going to require your leadership to go up. Okay? Mm-hmm. Because people who are paid, hopefully, will actually require more of you, the leader, than if they're not. It's just kind of how it goes. I'm not sure about the conversation around commitment. That's relative. But I will say that hopefully in the church, you know, your volunteer person will come knowing their stuff, and your paid person will come knowing their stuff. And somebody can't just say, oh, we're just a volunteer, so... You know, mm-hmm. I bet you if Michael Card showed up, you know your stuff. Just saying.
I saw another hand over here.
Yeah.
That was a lot of words.
We had this discussion / argument in our church 3, 4, 5 years ago about what to pay our musicians. So one individual on the team felt that that should be that individual's gift to God. I mean, that's how they should serve. But you're I think that goes with the medical doctor.
That's a good answer.
Yeah.
So, but it's very sensitive. Mm-hmm. And I think the key for me anyway is just to remember that we don't want just anybody. And I'm not saying all the praise team and so forth have to be paid, but mm-hmm. I think your lead musician should be someone with expertise. Mm. And chances that every congregation is going to have someone like that as a member.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yes.
So I'm full-time worship pastor. I've done this for 20 years. I don't like being the only worship planner.
Mm-hmm.
I was hoping somebody could share an experience, volunteer or church staff, where there's a collaborative team successfully planning worship.
That's good. We had planned on kind of getting in that. So, yeah, go ahead.
My first quick thought, and these guys will fill in wise ways, is if I were starting at ground zero like you, I would gather some worship planners for a season. Gather your best people for a short period of time. We're going to plan together for a season and see what works.
Yeah.
You know, then it's a fluid model. You might even, and this is encouragement to all of you, apply for a Calvin Institute of Christian Worship grant to say we're going to go from having a planning team to a planning team, because that creates, we're in this year where we're having a grant and we're exploring a number of things. That's where I'd begin. I'd pick your best people for reasons that you know and make it for a season. That's my first thought.
Worship.calvin.edu and one of the tabs will I would say slash grants, but I'm not like totally confident. So one of the tabs will lead you to the grants program.
Yeah.
So
and it's genius.
Yes, those are genius.
Yeah. I'll just follow up on that because I'm feeling a lot of empathy for you now, having to plan everything by yourself. We have done it seasonally. We used to have a worship committee because that's what Christian Reformed churches have. We have a worship committee. But we have sort of transitioned into seasonal planning teams. And I grab someone who's a young parent maybe or works in children's ministry. I grab a visual artist, someone who's interested in drama, a kid, a teen. I try and get people who are interested and creative and bring them together into a team. And sometimes it doesn't work. I've had bad experiences, but from out of that, there's about three or four people who actually are really good at this, and we collaborate together and bring out the best in each other, and then I can focus a little bit more on the music, but we just continue over the course of the season as we're planning things. We keep, collaborating about the art installation or whatever the next thing is. So finding those people is probably the hardest thing, but you know your congregation, so you would know who to ask, and you can just
and then carry training on from that. Just to echo again, and then training them, bringing them here, like what these guys are modeling is bringing, because then you're finding the voice of your institution, of your church community.
So I saw a number of hands, but I'll go with you since I see your hand.
To echo that, I just started doing kind of, as you said, with pulling together a group of people, but I also started with a program called Sanctified Art, which is an online, and it provides a lot of the groundwork. So then when my folks come who don't know anything, I hand them this thing and say, okay, here's the starting point. So that's been really helpful to me to kind of have a groundwork somewhat laid out. So as we're learning how to do this, it's been working. Mm-hmm.
The irony of my entire question is that Paul Ryan from here is on one of my worship teams.
So I won't tell Paul. Paul is actually, I've had him teach in my class simply because, for me, and I'll point you to this book. This is one of our Worship Institute books from a number of years back. It's called Designing Worship Together, Models and Strategies for Worship Planning. And it's written by Howard Vanderwell, who has gone to be with the Lord now. And leader with him was Norma DeWall Malphite, who served as a musician for a number of years. What I like about this book is that sometimes for me, just depending on different personalities, you need you need different strategies. You need adaptive strategies in some senses, and sometimes over here you just need a technical. Like, I literally don't know. My brain does not work in building a system,
right.
And I just need to see it laid out for me, and then that helps. So this book does some of that for you if you're bringing that sort of question into the discussion. The name is Designing Worship Together: Models and Strategies for Worship Planning. I think you can only find it online now. I don't, because it's published by Roman and Littlefield, and I don't believe they have a booth here. They're not one of the publishers that has a booth here.
Amazon.com, 25 cents, used and new.
Snatch it up! Only one copy! Here, let me, yes.
I think it helps that I've been at my church for so many years, so I know who the people are. And we had someone, for instance, working in the visuals, who was doing visuals for years and years, and she finally said, I'd really like to be a pastoral elder, and I don't want to do this anymore. And literally someone came up to me. No, she went to a worship conference and went to an art seminar and said, I think I can do this. I really like it. And then she told me what she had learned, and so now I can invite her in. And usually I try and keep my fingers in families, so I know what the kids are doing. Like, is someone taking piano lessons? Is anyone interested in art or writing? What do they love to do? So that I can keep tabs on what child might want to be involved in that. So it's hard to put a fix on it. It's really just keeping your eyes and ears open to who the people are in your congregation. And then honestly, sometimes making mistakes. I had an Advent planning team, and I thought, I'm going to get these two teens in here because we need to have teenagers on our team. And it was awful. So it did not work. It was my fault and them. Like, it was together. It didn't work. But that's okay. I've learned lots from that. I will do better next time.
I'd also say, in addition to that, that don't be afraid to just put it out there what you need. You know, I mean, if you've got a church that, I'm just making stuff up now, but if you've got a church that has like a job board or opportunities or whatever, put those opportunities there. If you're looking for people to help you plan services, treat it, even if it's not a paid position,
Right. Treat
it like a position. Say, here's what it is, write it out. This is what we're looking for, right? We need a person who is skilled in this and this and maybe can think through this, right? Keep it simple, particularly if it's volunteer, just keep it simple, right? Three things that, you know, somebody can be good at based on what you need. What you need to fill. I mean, that just might be a strategy. Put it out on a social media thing that you guys have, or post something on a page, or, you know, you'd be really surprised sometimes who's kind of lurking around the works, doesn't quite know what to do, and might be the person you're looking for.
Yes.
This follows up on that and the question from the back there. I'm a pastor and have been a worship leader pastor that, but I was serving a congregation where the worship director left, the part-time worship director, and everybody looked at me because I can do that, right? I mean, I could plan all the services, but it was like, no, it shouldn't be me. It's not, you know, it's not what I'm here for. And so we decided as the worship committee to host a kind of a worship planning seminar one evening, and then we each of us went out of our way to specifically invite people to say, you know, I've seen this in you. You have an ability with words, or you have an interest in, you know, you have a musical ear or whatever. And we ended up gathering 17 people out of a congregation of only 70 or 80 or something. And the understanding was this is simply for you to come and learn and try it out. Because just cold, they would have said, I don't know how to do that. So then we bought the worship source book for everybody and said, this is the book here. And I did some teaching on what worship is. A musician did some teaching on selecting songs. And then in the end, we ended up with almost every person wanted to be on a team of two. Mm. One felt they were more like wordsmiths and more word savvy, and they needed a musician to partner with them. And that became an excellent interim strategy, and they actually loved doing this together. Like, these two people would get together to plan for their once every 6 weeks service, and I could kind of shepherd that, but it wasn't all on me. And then eventually we did hire another worship coordinator, but it was a very good interim practice. It's like people need to be encouraged and can't be given the job cold because they don't think they know how to do it.
We're going to have a little bit of time at the end to have some more of the questions that you may still have. Before that, I do want to put another couple of questions out there for our panelists to respond to by way of bringing some of these ideas together. And one dynamic that I've heard named in many different ways, but we haven't really, I don't know if we've really addressed it directly, is just this dynamic that probably the most common, depending on church size, but probably the most common worship team dynamic that you're going to find in churches throughout North America, at least, is this dynamic between pastor and musician, or pastor and worship planner, or whatever it is. And so I'm wondering if one of the things that I found helpful in reading, there's another book by Eileen Gunther called Rivals or a Team, and it's about clergy and musician relationships. And one of the things that she did in the book, which I thought was interesting, was that she collected perspectives from about 20 clergy and from about 20 musicians to say, what do you most wish that clergy knew about you and how your world works and how your brain works and the things that you care about and pay attention to? And then likewise, clergy, what do you most wish that your musicians and worship leaders knew about you and the perspective that you're bringing and that kind of thing? I thought that was so helpful. So I just wondered if I could put that before our panelists. As pastors and worship leaders, what have you found that you most wish sort of the other side, whether you're a pastor or a worship leader, will understand about what you're bringing?
I have a thought.
Yep.
How do I say this? I would love non-musical, creative, I say that word loosely because everybody's creative, but you know what I mean in this context. Non-musical, non-creative leadership to understand that usually what they see on Sundays or a weekend, that the people doing it didn't roll out of bed and be fantastic. You know? Yeah, it's you don't see the process. You don't see the process of what it actually takes for a team to get from idea and concept of a service to actually performing it well. And you guys know this, like, it takes time. You can't just, like, you can't learn a new song when somebody just gives it to you and be like, be awesome. Like, no, you can't really do that, right? So for particularly non-musical and even non-technical leadership to just understand that by the time the weekend rolls around for the service, there have probably been 6 conversations. Your leader has probably had to find 4 drummers that you had to work through the computer breaking down because it was overloaded. You didn't know yet, you know, disk space, you know, just all of that stuff. I think the process to get to Sunday, I would love senior leaders or non-musical leaders to just understand that by the time they see the product that they love, it took a lot to get there. And also on the other side, for creative people, just to understand that, because we can get frustrated with non-musical leaders sometimes, but they'd have no way to know the process. Mm-hmm. So we need to understand that sometimes maybe we need to invite them into our processes to say, hey, let me just share with you what I'm doing this week, you know, just to help them out. And it starts to reveal itself. And I always get people who will send me emails saying, hey, I'm looking for a worship leader or a worship pastor to do this. But here's the deal. I need somebody to be the worship pastor, the student ministries pastor, and the outreach pastor. That's three full-time jobs. And a lot of that comes out of this idea that sometimes leaders don't see process. So all they see is, all you do is three songs on a Sunday. That's why you can be the worship pastor, the outreach pastor, and the student ministries pastor. Oh, and direct the traffic on the way in between services, right? Because all you do is show up and roll out of bed and be awesome. So I think that's a real important understanding, particularly for non-musical leadership, to understand about their creative people.
Well, I've been blessed that I have done, in terms of churches, whenever I had to be doing the planning, I was in a situation there was, like I mentioned, nobody else there. So I, and the pastor was glad that somebody was there, me. So I have had this, this experience in which I'm it. So, and I feel that because of all the other things I'm doing, this is not, I'm not a professional church worker, right? Mm. I teach and I am a student now. So whatever I can bring to it, it's, I have all these things that I get and I do outside, but so the church is glad that I am there to do what I can on Sundays. So I have this a friendship and an appreciation, knowing that my life is also much more than just doing that, what they see me doing on Sunday. So I don't want to sound like a traitor, but I see the other side, that really my life, I do a lot that is not planning. I cannot possibly be thinking about every Sunday. And like I mentioned, I know, Easter, April 12th, I have to work towards that. And then, but I cannot be, because that's not my context, right? So I think knowing the context where I'm going to be, and is that going to work for me? I cannot see myself actually doing what you do, probably, because I have never done it, even though. So I may be saying some things that, that's not helpful. That's, no. I may be the only one, but I'm just saying it's also true that sometimes that happens. And maybe the pastor is coming from that perspective. And in my church, I think I'm aware also that we have three people that are paid a full-time salary. The pastor, the administrator / secretary, and the janitor. These are the paid people in the congregation. I mean, I'm paid $500 a month. We have three services on Sunday, Wednesday, you know, and I go to council meetings and I do all that. So I don't consider that it's a salary, right? I cannot live on $500 a week. So I give what I, it's not because, I do way more than $500. So that's how, they understand that. I'm in a different kind of circumstance. And maybe somebody here is in a smaller church or maybe a poorer church that has, we don't have money. At the end of the month, if we have $1,800 in the bank for the whole month, that's, I mean, left over after we pay all the bills and everything, we are excited. So I think knowing the context, the history, what has been done up to that point, where we are, will help all of us know how come it's not this way. Well, maybe it can't.
Right. You know? Yes.
It's just impossible to be.
Yes.
And then we decide, can I function this, or am I looking for something else? Am I in the right place? So that's how I would.
It's good work.
Thank you. That's really good.
Oh, I'll go, and then you can. I would always like pastors to care more about music. Always. The pastor that I generally work with the most happens to be my husband, and he doesn't know music or like music or really care about music that much. I'm not quite sure how we ever got married, but there you go. So
because I would like to be really intentional about the song that comes after the sermon. Like, I can handle, we have 3-month periods of time in which he gives passages and we're doing series, and I can look ahead on all kinds of things, but when it comes to the song after the sermon, I would like it to be right, because that's the kind of person I am. And the pastor has other gifts, and one of his gifts is to really trust the Holy Spirit. And that's the gift that he wants to give to me. How about you trust just a little bit more? And I said, how about you care just a little bit more? Anyway, this is not a marriage session. We're all good. But what I've discovered, and I have only worked with Eric, except for those 3 years when I was working at another church. So that's interesting, because that pastor was completely the opposite. And I also don't appreciate a pastor who has his fingers in every, detailing me to death, right? Like, I know what I'm doing. So there's obviously a beautiful sweet spot somewhere right in the middle of that. But what's really helped us, not just worship director and pastor, but all of the staff members, is that we've learned about each other and about our strengths and our weaknesses, and we've done a ton of personality profiles and lots of talking about Enneagram and where are your strengths. And knowing that does not solve all problems, but it does certainly help in terms of how we relate to each other as staff people and how we work, so that you get a little bit where they're coming from and you learn to work out that balance. So that's it.
Yeah, I as a pastor, one of those sayings we have at our church is, don't surprise the senior pastor. And that really is a way of saying, don't surprise anybody on staff. Mm-hmm. It's not just my position, because of a couple things. One is, if someone comes to me and says, did you hear that such and such happened? I want to know, mm-hmm. so I can back you up.
Right.
Okay.
That's right.
In the non-music world. Yes. In the music world, one time back in the drama days, we had this beautiful drama sketch scheduled, and I did a whole sermon intro off the drama sketch. And and our music/drama person sat down after his offering, and before I was going to get up there, and just looked at me, and I looked at him, and he looked at me, and I looked at him, and he said, there will be no drama today.
Oh, great.
Don't surprise the senior pastor. That was a pretty big surprise, right? I have the advantage where my wife understands music, and she was our lead musician for a long, long time, and so I feel like I'm sensitive to all the struggles and all the work of trying to get, the fifth drummer or whatever you're up to. And now we're not going with drums. We're doing something else. One of the gifts we've had, and I'll just make this observation, we've had in the last while, is I wonder if, instead of it being a rival between lead musician and senior pastor, could that be more of a team? Mm-hmm. We in the last a year, without really planning it, we've had the gift of this person who added to that conversation. So we have a lead musician, a lead worship planner, and me. The lead musician is wonderful, contagious artist who's an introvert, who's artistic, who's an Enneagram 4. I can give you a category after category after category. And then you bring in an administrator. So he's, and Myers-Briggs, he's playing it. He's a P, let's not nail it down till it needs to be nailed down, which means after Eucharist, we say, what song are we singing as people exit? That kind of deal. But he's wonderfully gifted. And we brought in somebody else who now he lives to nail things down. So it's not me and the musician, this wonderful musician, it's now the three of us. Right. And that just changes the chemistry. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like we didn't get along. Mm-hmm. It's just like, but having that extra layer of the team made the getting along just mm-hmm. easier. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So a thought, an observation, mm-hmm. I can't say it's true of every church mm-hmm. in America, mm-hmm. North America.
So I wonder if, just one more question that you could reflect on is, if you would, thinking about this conversation and the idea of worship team, what is one lesson that you've learned that you're so glad? Maybe it was a painful lesson. Maybe it was a joyful and painful lesson. But what was a key lesson that really helped you along the way with this idea of how worship team, well-functioning planning team, the potential there?
I would say several things. Gosh, man, that's so broad. So a few things. One is love people more than you love songs. Love people more than you love liturgy and program. Love your congregation more than what you've planned. And remember to be a human being when you get on a platform. Please, I beg of you. I need to see your face for this, Miss Anna. So, this is what I mean by this. These days, now warning, this is my opinion. Warning, this is my opinion. These days, what I see is a lack of engagement overall. Not only from, I'm not talking about whether a congregation sings or not or whatever, but from the platform. From people who are leading. It's sort of like we show up sometimes and let the songs lead the people. I mean, have you ever been to a space and, just hearing me here for a minute, Noel.
Sure.
So you ever been to a space and, you know, like you guys are a congregation and you're waiting for the worship team to come out and then the worship team kind of comes out like this. Right? You're like, hello, we're in the room. Like, you know, it's weird. Isn't it creepy? And I think it's creepy because, like singing, making music is about communication. It's not about tones. You know, it's kind of like if you're singing, what's your name, Mr. John? Pastor John, Mr. John. I would say, you know, Mr. John, I want to tell you a story. So I was walking outside the other day, and it was just so awesome. Like, you know, you wouldn't think about talking to somebody with your eyes closed. Because it's creepy. Isn't it creepy? But what's happening, the reason I say that is because what's happening is that's essentially what we're doing when we kind of show up in front of our congregations and don't talk to them. Mm. Like at all. And we think that, well, if we just sing the right songs, whatever those are, because that's relative, by the way. If we just sing the right songs, well, then people will sing. And if they don't sing, that means the song wasn't right. When really, it could be that you just didn't say hello to them in the morning. Like, just think about that for a minute. You didn't say hi and introduce yourself, right? You assumed everybody knew that you were John, you know, they've seen you before, kind of a thing, rather than just being a human being. Like, if I met you for the first time, I'd say, hi, I'm Nikki.
Hi, I'm Noel.
I wouldn't just go, and then I had breakfast this morning, and it was so awesome, and, you know, like, that's creepy. Don't be creepy. Be a human being. Be a human being. Laugh during worship. You know, if something struck your teen funny at rehearsal and it showed itself again on Sunday, like, laugh, right? Let somebody spit their water out in the middle of, like, it's just being human. Do you know what I'm getting at? I think we're just starting to that fourth wall that is between us and the congregation that we have to work through every week. It's like we're afraid of breaking through it. So I would just say, it's a lesson with your team, is work really hard to just talk to the people. Please, please engage with the people. Share scripture, share a funny story, something. Please, I'm begging you. I see it everywhere that we're not engaging with people, and it's weird and it's creepy. So that's what I would say. As a lesson.
Thanks.
I would say patience is very important. In a church, I think, like I mentioned, in school I can plan things for the semester. And then some students are graduating and then they're gone and new ones will come. And sometimes I plan something and I don't know who is going to come. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I have to. But I do think in terms of, you know, this semester. In the church, I have plans that, like I was saying before, I have been in this congregation now for 11 years. And when I first came in, I was just supposed to lead the congregational singing in Spanish. We have two services in the morning. And little by little, I was there, and then someone retired, and then they thought, well, why don't you do this now? And I kind of grew into this, that I now lead all the congregational singing in Spanish and English, two choirs of adults, one children's choir, and so with the pianist that works with me. But when I first came in there, I looked at that congregation and I heard what they were singing, and some things were wonderful and some things were like, I have never seen anything like that before. And I knew immediately, I don't like this, and I don't think this is right, I don't think this is good. But for some of these things that I knew from the very beginning, I would like to maybe change, I waited for some of them, I would say 6 or 7 years. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because I felt I needed to earn the trust of the congregation. I'm an outsider, so yes, I can communicate in Spanish, but I just came in there to start leading the music. I'm from Brazil. I don't eat tortillas in my home, and they don't understand that. How can you live without tortillas? And they come, you don't eat tortillas in Brazil. No, believe me, we can survive. But it takes time. And now, you know, they understand. And in Sunday morning, we eat tacos. Food is a great thing. That would be my other thing, food. Food is excellent. We get together, and we have a party once a year just for the choir. We're going to come and eat and talk. Two things we cannot do during rehearsal, but are important. So we come for eating and talking. So Sunday morning, we have tacos before services in the morning. We have a prayer meeting and then tacos, and then we go on with our day. It's excellent. We have several people who, you know, professional cooks, so everybody's invited. But so Sunday morning, when I go in there, if by any chance the dish is menudo, does anybody know what menudo is? Okay, menudo is, as they say, the most amazing food that they have for breakfast. It's a soup, a broth with tripe and other kind of, I don't know, innards? I don't know the word. But anyway, that, and then some kind of corn, and then they put lots of jalapenos, of course, and then cilantro, raw onions. That's breakfast, right? And I said, I like Mexican food, but menudo, I draw the line at menudo. So what happens now? Instead of, oh, she doesn't like menudo. No, it's like, hermana Montero, here's your taco. They have one for me. We know. And somebody else is going to have some sweet bread, something. I come to the kitchen. Oh, yeah, menudo today, sorry. But here is your. So I didn't ask for it. Right? But they understand I'm in there to be a part. I am part of the church. I don't speak about them. I don't. This is everything. I'm in the middle of it. I play piano for the women's union. I go to the mission trip. I go to the prayer meeting. And because this is my family. My whole family lives in Brazil. So holidays, I celebrate Christmas at church. New Year's, we have a service at church. That's my family. And I think that's also important. I don't come there to do a job. So I live here. This is my home, right? So I have patience to work through the things I think I can contribute in a positive way. Some things I have not changed. I still don't like them. But guess what? That's how it is. And let's go on with life, right? But patience. And then appreciation, food, friendship. These are the things.
Thank you.
They're great, great lessons. Mm-hmm. Food is good. I think I'm going to add food to my. Everyone's going to have a different crucial lesson, I think, based on who you are and the kind of mistakes you've made. I'm a perfectionist, so my lessons to learn are that I have to come with looser hands, mm-hmm. grasping my ideas, mm-hmm. Being ready to be okay with a less than perfect choice, at least in my clear mind, based on my love for the people and for the team. Mm-hmm. So just working hard at holding my ideas a little bit looser, that's a crucial lesson. Mm-hmm. And the other one I'm going to say is being really clear in your communication when you're talking to your team about what you expect, mm-hmm. and whether that's a planning team or a music-making team. When you ask a question, they want to know why you want that answer. Are you going to do something with this answer, or is this mm-hmm. just meaningless chat that I'm doing mm-hmm. here, and they feel that they're not contributing? because I've made a few mistakes like that as well. So just being really clear up front what you want, what you're asking from them.
I think of John 1, you know, Jesus came from the Father incarnate in this arrival no one could predict, and he came from the Father full of grace and truth. And, you know, being in the same spot for 29 years, I just think at the end of the day, what people really need is for us to love them.
Yes.
And the way we love them is to tell the truth.
Yes.
And as gracefully as we can. Sometimes that means encouragement. Sometimes it means correction. Sometimes it means, no, we're not singing that song because we don't ever want to sing that song the next time. Sometimes it means you're acting like a prima donna or something slightly softer than that but has the same effect.
Mm-hmm.
But I think just over that, being in the same spot, you see the results of the mistakes you've made. And and you live with all of those. And there's a number of them. It's because you didn't tell the truth, and things went on longer than they should have.
That's good.
But because you care and because you love people, and letting in a way that they know we're really for you. If they react like a grown up, you can't predict always.
Yeah.
But that would be my wisdom. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you. So we have probably time for one or two more questions, and then it's time for break and do we have food? I don't know if we have food, so I'm not going to promise it.
I expect food at Calvin all the time.
Yeah, I can't.
Josh, you just gave, we don't have food.
Yeah. I know. Yeah, missed opportunity.
Tacos.
Yes.
Tacos next time.
So, I know we're short on time, but just I'd be curious quickly if anyone would share what are your weekly planning, what are your weekly collaborative planning rhythms like?
I can jump in first. We meet once a month at this point. It's because we've been around for a long time, like 12, 13 years. So there's a sense of collaboration and cooperation and understanding. But we meet once a month, and almost always you go over some video from the last 2 weeks because we find ourselves thinking about something Sunday morning, but then Monday comes and we're on to the next thing. But if you watch the video, you think, it's kind of ishy to watch the video, but that then leads into the conversation about do things fit and what needs to change, and that becomes our launching pad.
When you say we, who's involved in that meeting?
In our church, it's the part-time lead music person, worship planner, who does other things as well, and myself, always, and then usually a couple interns. If there's a pastor who's preaching who's not one of that mix, then they'll be included as well. It's streamlined from what used to be a bigger team, which met every single week. We had 2-hour meetings. Now we have 1-hour meetings once a month. Thank you, Jesus.
So, Kevin, to follow up on that, is it only a debrief meeting then? Like, where does planning happen?
Planning happens, thanks for that, Joan. Planning happens along, as lead pastor, as lead teacher, I set out the worship text, so like I just sent them out. I feel a little behind, but this is probably a little perfectionist strategy because now I just sent them through July, and I'm like, that's way behind. But that gives people a sense. that gives me a sense as a preacher. Yeah. I really believe in ideas kind of brewing over time. Mm. There's a saying in Proverbs apples of gold and settings of silver. It's like you don't grow apples of gold in 3 days. You don't decide on Wednesday, what am I going to preach and have it? Most of us don't. So then there's that sense of trajectory where the musicians and the worship people know this is what's coming. And so that then can become a more efficient meeting. Yeah.
Do you want to grab that question?
Well, unless there's other weekly rhythms that you...
We meet with pastors. I've lead pastor and an intern pastor and myself when a season is approaching and let them so that
what's
we can,
a season like fall
a fall
spring.
Series and then yeah. Advent and then a winter series that we're in now and then the Lent Good Friday and then we have a kind of a ministry season is what we call it at the end, but I meet with those guys so that we all know where we're going scripture wise and main themes, and then I take that weekly into my worship team and or the other worship planner who also leads once or twice a month. So then she and I work together and collaborate together.
What do those meetings look like, can I ask?
Ooh. Well, we're going to have
she
one next week.
She comes in with a big stick.
Which meeting do you want to know what it looks like?
I mean, if you can generally, we probably all plan with, or those of us who plan in groups, plan with our team, but even with the pastor.
So, wow. Yeah. Well, I tell them what I would like to see, and they tell me, I don't know how to. Yeah, it's kind of, we have an idea. Somebody is allowed to come up with the idea for that series. So then they can say, this is why I thought that. Like right now we're doing the 12 steps out of addiction. We did waiting during Advent. So whichever pastor brings that idea, and then we talk through that and what we'd like to see happen for the congregation in that. And then I usually bring that information. It's an hour meeting tops. And I bring that to my worship planners or to the seasonal team. And that's where we get into the nitty-gritty. Hey, what are the visuals and the kids going to do? Those kind of things.
I will say on that question, there's a great appendix in a book called Worship Words by Ron and Deb Reenstra. And this appendix has several different stages. So that's not exactly what the book is about, but the appendix on worship planning is awesome. And it has these stages. Previse, which is kind of the gather all ideas and no bad ideas stage. And that's like, that's sort of a month out, I think, is how they're conceiving it, or a couple of weeks out. And you've got the revise, and that's closer in. And then you've got the, I'm going to forget all the categories.
Devise.
But there's, what's that? Devise. Yeah, like how do we actually put this into practice? Like what's the plan for this week? And then final one is some other vise, but it's a
compromise.
It's a looking back on
compromise.
Despise.
It's a new word in the dictionary. Compromise.
It's a looking back, and I've heard this talked about as it's could be important that the critical function comes later on in the meeting, because sometimes if you put the critical function up front, then that can kill the creativity that you're hoping to stimulate for further advanced planning.
Yes.
So let's see, one more question. Yes.
Does your summer routine change in life?
Mine yes. doesn't.
No.
Because volunteers
yes.
are slimmer.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. There's fewer of them.
Volunteers again.
Yeah. Volunteers are slimmer. Yeah.
And no, because
no change. We just keep going.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
No vacations.
And we meet monthly, so
it's just the same.
I have to get to a different worship service, but I don't know about these panelists, if they'll be able to talk okay. So Nikki at least can hang if you have more questions, but let's take a moment to... thank you.
That's for you guys.
Mm-hmm. For dinner, it's a vesper service.
That sounds really fun.